American intelligence officers picked up and passed to ExxonMobil, reporting that suspected extremists had surveilled the oil fields. Afterward, the security officer at the U.S. Embassy was invited by the corporation to inspect the facility to assess its vulnerabilities. He found it wanting. There were holes in the fences, and the Chadian paramilitaries protecting the region were found either in their T-shirts and flip-flops playing cards and eating or sleeping in their tents. The facility was totally unprepared for any level of terrorist attack. The gendarmes often go months without pay. What is provided by Chad's government lacks numbers, motivation, discipline, and training. The morale is poor, and their equipment is not good. Locals complained that the police preyed upon them. For its part, after its travails in Indonesia, ExxonMobil was doubly sensitive about allowing local forces guarding its facilities to shoot aggressively at attacking guerrillas. The corporation's Chadian executives told the U.S. security officer that they were more likely to shut down and evacuate Qom than defend it if Chad failed to do the job. In the worst case, since they had made their money back, they just might sell what remains to the Chinese. To defend ExxonMobil, the assessing officer suggested that the United States should consider providing to the local police and gendarmes basic to advanced firearms training, as well as instruction in police and patrol tactics to counter any terrorist threat. A small leadership and analysis team from ExxonMobil Global Security supported the local guard force from the capital, in N'Djamena. The team worked from a compound of bungalows and offices that made up the corporation's country headquarters on the Avenue Charles de Gaulle. They were former police and retired military men. They built an intelligence collection operation separate from, and in many ways better sourced, than that run by the small Central Intelligence Agency station in the nearby American Embassy. ExxonMobil enjoyed privileged access to Deby and his military and intelligence advisors because, in 2006, the corporation and its partners would transfer to Deby some $774 million, whereas U.S. government aid, all totaled, including the counterterrorism assistance provided by the CIA, was in the neighborhood of 1% of that amount. That equation had changed little since the World Bank-sponsored oil project began. Deby's aides hardly required calculators to understand where their interests lay. Statisticians at ExxonMobil's upstream division headquarters in Houston helpfully prepared PowerPoint slides for use by the U.S. Embassy. Slides that emphasized the outsized benefits of the corporation's activities in Chad for the United States. 1,000 American jobs per year during the construction phase of the Chad oil project. 200 expatriate jobs for Americans in the country, generating about $70 million in total revenues. A projected 24 million barrels of direct oil exports to American refineries annually. And more than $1 billion in profits returned to American shareholders over about 6 years. American diplomats in N'Djamena transmitted statistics fed to them by ExxonMobil's country manager in cable after cable to Washington. In N'Djamena, ExxonMobil's security officers used their influence and inside access to Deby's security regime to school themselves like political science scholars in the region's alphabet soup of liberation armies and quasi-criminal gangs. And they monitored reporting inside Deby's palace for emerging threats, particularly any mutiny that might reach the south, target ExxonMobil directly, or otherwise call for an employee evacuation plan to be activated. The global security team continually planned, mapped, and exercised evacuation routes into Cameroon by road and air. The salaries earned by the corporation's local guards poured into a corrupt, inflation-racked regional economy. Before oil, the South was a region of marginal subsistence farming. Sorghum and cotton were staple crops. The rains were erratic, and the roads to market could be impassable when wet. The construction and employment boom that followed ExxonMobil's arrival flooded the area with cash. Farming families that might previously have earned $125 in a year received as much as $7,500 in one-time payments for land rights. Food prices spiked. The cost of a sack of staple millet doubled. World Bank development specialists encouraged schemes of micro-lending to local households in the hope that this temporary influx of capital could be converted to self-sustaining entrepreneurship. but too many borrowers absconded and blew their funds on motorbikes and bilibili. Labor contractors connected to Dabi's administration brokered construction jobs in the oil fields and skimmed off what a Chadian court later determined to be $7.5 million in wages, money that never reached the workers who actually built the derricks. About half that amount was later paid out to 4,000 workers in a settlement. The stolen money was never traced. At times, depending on the ambassador, the U.S. Embassy in N'Djamena provided optimistic assessments to Washington. ExxonMobil is regarded as a model company, particularly in respect to continuing good community relations and environmental consciousness, one cable reported. The corporation has upheld American standards in terms of worker entitlements to wages, safety, and health. But ExxonMobil's disciplined systems and investments did not resolve the country's weak governance, corruption, poverty, or unmet aspirations. The influx of oil revenue has created little improvement, frustrating heightened expectations, a confidential U.S. State Department-led fact-finding team reported in early 2006. Many Chadians told the interagency team they were better off before the oil. Armed with advice from consultants in poverty reduction and corporate responsibility, ExxonMobil allocated modest sums to local projects in the South intended to demonstrate Irving's commitment to global citizenship. Among other things, the corporation constructed a water storage tower in a village about a 20-minute drive on rutted roads from the comb fences. In a decision that seems unlikely to have crossed Lee Raymond's desk during the latter part of his tenure, ExxonMobil's regional managers installed solar panels to generate the electricity needed to pump well water into the newly constructed village tank. Thieves ripped the panels out, however, and soon all that remained was the storage tower and the metal rails that had once held the solar panels in place. Theft at ExxonMobil's properties was rampant. The corporation lost $500,000 worth of equipment in 2006 alone. Comb 5's security doors were a favorite target. Locals made bets from them. Popular disenchantment increased when local officials imposed what was regarded as an ESSO-imposed 6 p.m. curfew in response to the looting. During the hopeful days when the World Bank and Exxon had planned the Chad project as a pioneering experiment in nation-building and social engineering, Exxon erected a health clinic in Comb. When the Chadian government also requested a nurse, medicine, and equipment, the corporation refused. It locked up the building until Chad hired its own healthcare workers to staff it.